And welcome back in Game Day, sportsradio.com. Boji Wood along with you for the morning blitz on a Tuesday morning, October the 9th, 2018. Bringing in Mike Bernard for our NFL recap. Mike, how are you on a Tuesday morning?
Doing well. One football weekend down, and we're going to start another one here soon.
That's so true, so true. Morning Blitz brought to you by Firehouse Subs, over 1,000 locations nationwide. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. Mike, week five in the NFL, and before we get into the games, I want to ask you a quick question. Always been common for players to blast officials. They pay their fine and go on about their business, no big deal. This season, coaches are really getting into the act. Mike Tomlin, he becomes the latest NFL coach to just outright criticize officials' calls in the press. Mike Zimmer, Sean Payton, Mike McCarthy, Pat Schumer, Hugh Jackson. But really the best thing I could do is name the ones who haven't criticized the officials in the press. That would be the shorter list. Troy Vincent, who's the executive vice president of the NFL, he's already been in contact with Tomlin. Probably going to have a fine coming there for Tomlin's comments. But the coaches, they're not really criticizing the officials themselves. They're blasting the league for the rules that the officials are charged with calling. And some of it, in my opinion, is just, it's awful. It is just plain awful. I know they want safety, and I want safety. But, again, you can't take away the physicality of a football game. And replay, another thing, while I'm on this little rant, replay, it looks to be determining games. And not replay from the venue, but coming from the league office in New York City. I mean, they're reaching their tentacles into the very fabric of the games now. Used to, the office had nothing to do with the games on Sunday, but now they're involved in every single game. It's overwhelming when you look at it, that opinion and speculation is now bleeding over into indisputable video evidence as far as the replay goes. And you see it both in college and NFL. I think it's much worse in the NFL. Now, and again, that was a great rant, but here's the question that I was trying to get to, is that you guys look at every aspect of a game. I know when I was coaching, we wanted to know what crew was calling our games as soon as we could find out, because certain crews have tendencies to let offensive line hold more. They let defensive backs and receivers get a little bit more physical with each other. Some call it real tight. So we wanted to know who that crew was so we could kind of adjust things. Do you guys ever look at officiating crews for particular games and their past tendencies, and is it factored into the end of the line in any way?
It is, and as the good handicappers take a look at that, most of the time, to be honest, there's not much difference between crews, but I know we're talking about football here, but where it's more prevalent is in baseball. A home plate umpire sometimes will have really strong tendencies for unders or overs, not for a particular team. But in football, we do look at it, especially in the postseason or the big games in college football. So, yes, it is factored in. And I agree with you when you're talking about, look, I'm all for getting the calls right. And I know it's going to lengthen the games and so forth. But I see defensive players falling at the legs of quarterbacks and pulling them down by the ankles, and it's called roughing the passer. And it's just, I don't know how these defensive linemen and linebackers are, how they're supposed to play.
No, because the rules basically state if you go at a quarterback low, then guess what? That's roughing the passer. Now, if you go at him high and you fall on top of him, that's roughing the passer. It's just, it's ridiculous. Well, let's get into the games. Carolina and the Giants. Cam Newton got the Panthers just close enough, and Graham Gano kicks a game-winning field goal from 63 yards out with 1 second remaining. Panthers 33, Giants 31. Panthers, they improved to 3-1. Second place in the NFC South now behind the Saints. The Giants, they fell to 1-4. Odell Beckham Jr. called out coaches in the locker room, and teammates, too. He called out coaches and teammates, but didn't seem to take any blame for himself there. This guy is no doubt a tremendous talent, and he's had some of the most phenomenal plays over the last few years in the NFL as far as receiving. But, yeah, he's got to be a cancer in the locker room.
No doubt. He's just a toxic teammate, which is maybe an oxymoron, but he's just a toxic figure in that locker room. And when you call out your teammates and talk about how, hey, we're not throwing it to me, we're not throwing it downfield, you know, it's not an easy job back there for Eli when he's, you know, getting pressured every single play. He can't see the entire field. But they lost a heartbreaker. They outgained Carolina 432 to 350. The Giants defense, they forced two picks from Cam, and they still lose on a 63-yard field goal. Gano kicks that field goal, which at one time would have been the longest field goal in NFL history. Now it's tied for second. The Giants cover the game. They lose it, but they cover the game, and, of course, it goes well over 44 points.
Next up for Carolina, they go up the road to take on the Redskins. Next up for Carolina, they go up the road to Washington, take on the Redskins. The Giants, Thursday night home game versus the Eagles. The Brownies, and why is this game not up in the top slot? I just will never understand that. The Brownies, 12, Baltimore 9 in overtime. The Browns almost had another tie, which would be strange in today's game, but Baker Mayfield, 25 of 43, 342 yards and a touchdown, made some key throws in overtime. Greg Joseph kicked a game-winning field goal with 2 seconds left, and I've witnessed a lot of field goals in my 57 years. To me, that was both the ugliest and prettiest one that I've ever seen in my life. Browns get their first win on a Sunday since back in December of 2015. They're now 2-2-1 on the year. Mike, again, I'm very partial to the Browns, but a decent kicker, and my Brownies are undefeated.
Oh, yeah, no question. And that game-winning field goal with 2 seconds left, it looked more like an onside kick, so it wasn't pretty. You're right. But, look, the Browns' defense, they kept Flacco in check. He had 29 completions, but they forced 27 incompletions, so 29 of 56. Cleveland, they get the outright win, and, of course, they cover because they were a home dog. The game easily stayed under 44.5.
And next up for the Browns, they're going to host the Chargers next Sunday and the Ravens and go to Tennessee next week. Kansas City, they keep it going. Chiefs 30, Jacksonville 14. Chiefs force 5 turnovers, including a pick 6. Chris Jones right before the half. It was a safe pass call, too, by Jacksonville. Chris Jones just made a great play, read the screen, jumped up, made a super athletic play, took it in for the score. Patrick Mahomes, again, solid day, 22 of 38, 313 yards, no touchdowns, had a couple of picks, but really didn't factor into the Chiefs at being close or anything. Right now, the Chiefs and the Rams are the only unbeaten teams after week 5.
Yeah, the Chiefs are basically exactly where they were last year, unbeaten through week 5. And the game against the Jaguars, who obviously are a really good team, they went to the AFC championship game last year, have most of that team back. They're solid. But the Chiefs got up 20-0 at half. They just cruised from there. Blake Bortles threw 4 picks. And listen, this defense, they're in the bottom 10 of the league, so that was a real poor performance from Bortles. Jacksonville outgained Kansas City 502 to 424. But that's attributed to the fact that the Jaguars were playing from behind basically the entire game. Kansas City, they cover the 3 with ease, and the game stays under 48.
Next up for the Chiefs, they go take on the Patriots Monday night. I think we'll find out a lot about this Chiefs team Monday night. Bill Belichick, he's already singing the praises of Patrick Mahomes, but how can you not? Next up for Jacksonville, it's going to Jerry's World to take on the Cowboys. Pittsburgh, 41, Atlanta, 14. Yes, you heard that right, folks. 41-14. Atlanta, they're now 1-4. Steelers moved to 2-1. Pittsburgh only led 13-10 at halftime, and they outscored Atlanta 28-7 in the second half. Atlanta ran for 62 yards, and Pittsburgh ran for 131. Big Ben, 19 of 29, 250 yards, three touchdowns, did have the one pick. Matt Ryan, again, a solid day, 26 of 38, 285 yards, a touchdown, no picks. But, Mike, this Falcon offense, to me, they had the intensity of a preseason game. I mean, after playing well enough the first 4 weeks to be 4-0, you know, it had to be frustration there, and this offense just looked lethargic.
Well, the Steelers' defense hasn't been your typical Steelers' defense, and most thought that Atlanta would put up plenty of points in this game, but you're right, they did. They didn't click on Sunday, and frankly, Atlanta's done. They're in last place of the NFC South. They have a record of 1-4. They can't stop the run. They don't stop the pass. Odds makers have given Atlanta a major downgrade. Remember a couple of weeks ago when the Falcons were at home over Carolina, they were favored by 6. Well, this coming up Sunday, Atlanta's favored by 3.5 over Tampa Bay, and that's a home game as well, so that's a major downgrade. Steelers, of course, they cover the 3 with ease, and the game just squeaks over 57.
Speaking of the Bucs, they'll be traveling north to take on the Falcons this coming Sunday. As for Pittsburgh, they travel to Cincinnati to meet the Bengals. Minnesota 23, Philadelphia 21. It's a rematch of last year's 2017 NFC Championship game. The Vikings, they avenged that 38-7 loss. Don't get them to the Super Bowl, but at least they avenged the loss. Now the Eagles have lost two straight. They're sitting there at 2-3. Vikings improved to 2-2-1. That seems to be a popular record right now in the league. To me, the turning point of this game was 4 minutes and 12 seconds before the half. Eagles are moving into the red zone and they're with ease. And then Linval Joseph comes up with a big, big play for the Vikings.
Yeah, the game was tied at 3 apiece. Eagles were driving into Viking territory. Wentz was hit. He fumbled. The Vikings defensive lineman caught it in midair. He returned it all the way for a score. They went up 10-3. They tacked on another touchdown before the half. They led 17-3 at that point. Too many mistakes for Philadelphia. In addition to that fumbled return, that fumble that was returned for a touchdown, Jay Ajayi fumbled on the Vikings 2 or 3 yard line when they were trying to come back. The Super Bowl champs haven't done well the next year when it comes to repeating. Not just repeating in the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl champ has failed to make the playoffs the following year. 7 of the last 16 years, you and I have talked often about the reasons why, free agency and so on. The Eagles are in jeopardy of making that 8 of the last 17 years. Of course, the Vikings win, so they cover because they were an underdog, and the game stayed under the total.
Yeah, Joseph's Viking teammates, they were making fun of him after the game, saying 64 yards, that was the most they'd ever seen him run at one time without stopping. All right, Philadelphia, Thursday night against the Giants. We talked about that game. Next up for the Vikings, they're going to host the Cardinals. The Rams, they stay undefeated, 33-31 over the Seahawks, and they did improve to 5-0, but it wasn't easy. Rams outscored Seattle 9-0 in the fourth quarter to get the win. Quarterback Russell Wilson for the Seahawks, he's solid, but they fall to 2-3. Sounds crazy, but it looked as though the Rams were playing uninspired, almost looking forward to next week.
Yeah, I couldn't put my finger on it. I watched much of that game, and they did have to come from behind. I don't think this is it, but last year they went into Seattle and beat them 42-7. I don't think they were complacent. I think Seattle was up for this game. The Rams, they now have a 3-game lead in the NFC West. Todd Gurley, he ran for 3 scores, didn't have a lot of yards, though. Jared Goff, he threw for 321, had 2 scores, but he was also picked off twice. Seattle offensive line, look, I've given them heck all year. They were better than previous games in this one. If you want to know, Coach, if you want to know what Russell Wilson is about, and I know you do, but the listeners, go back and watch the play where Wilson outruns his running back 20 yards downfield to throw a block, and it was an actual block. He still has the wheels. I guess he still has to, because that offensive line doesn't protect him that well. The Rams get the win. They come from behind, get the win, but Seattle covers the game, and it easily goes over 50.
Russell Wilson, one of the great competitors in general in the NFL. That's just the way that he plays. He's always played that way at college and now in the NFL. He was the same way when he played baseball. Both of these teams are going to go on the road next week. Seattle, they travel to Oakland. Rams, they go to Denver for a big – and when I say it's a big game, it's a game that means a lot to Sean McVay. You guys do the research, find out why. I know. Sunday night, Houston 19, Dallas 16 in overtime, the Battle of Texas. And it was a defensive showdown they played in Houston. Very hard-hitting game, great defenses, great effort by both defenses. Ezekiel Elliott, only 54 yards rushing. But a big reason why Houston got their first win since Dallas over Dallas since 2002 was the fact that that defense played so well. Because had they not, listen, Dallas's defense was just as good. And we've talked about this in the past, about being able to run the football and being able to stop the run. And both defenses were able to stop the run, so to speak. But Houston made the plays when they had to. And they made them in the air most of the time. DeAndre Hopkins, 151 yards receiving, had a huge play on a 49-yard reception in overtime, got the Texans into field goal range. Think about this. The Texans outgained the Cowboys 462-292. Now, that's a difference of 170 yards, which is a lot. And usually when you outgain somebody by a total of 170 yards, I mean, you know, you're going to win the game during regulation, not in overtime. But you know what? Because of that Dallas defense and the effort that they gave, listen, they still needed overtime to get the win.
Yeah, a yardage differential like that usually means a double-digit margin of victory. But Dallas, they made huge stops, several of them in the red zone. Of course, it wasn't enough, but they held Houston to four field goals and one touchdown. Impressive, but they're still looking at a 2-3 record. Deshaun Watson showed his toughness once again. He was hit very hard multiple times. He would go into the medical tent. He'd come out for the next series. Watson threw for 374 on a very good defense. Former Alabama standout Kareem Jackson got his 15th career interception. I was surprised to see that. That's a franchise record. The point spread in this game was Houston -3 or 3.5. So the game ends right or around the number. The total stayed under by 10 points, even with the overtime period.
Both these teams will be at home next week. Dallas, they host the Jags. Houston, they host the Bills. Monday Night Football, very special night. The Redskins go to New Orleans. Drew Brees only needed 201 yards to surpass Peyton Manning, who had 71,940 yards for the most passing yards in NFL history. He got it easily in the 43-19 win over the Redskins. Broke the record with a 62-yard touchdown toss to Tuan Smith in the second quarter. Brees ends the night fantastically. 26 of 29, 363 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, and now his total yardage sits at 72,303.
Yeah, that's a great historic moment, and I like Brees. I think he's the consummate professional. He doesn't he's never talked trash. He's never whined and cried. Remember when that situation when the Dolphins, when Saban was at Miami and he wanted Brees? Well, Brees couldn't pass the physical, but and then he went on. That was how many years ago? So look what he's done since then. So the guy's resilient. He's not he doesn't have all the physical traits that your prototypical NFL quarterback does have, but he's a winner, he's a competitor, and he does have a Super Bowl ring. I disagree with that you have to have a Super Bowl ring to be a great quarterback, but he does have that. And now he's the all-time leader in pass yards.
No doubt about it. One thing about Drew Brees and the Nick Saban connection, it speaks, number one, of Nick Saban's ability to identify talent, no matter what the level is. The reason that Breeze could not pass the physical with the Dolphins because it was too soon after his surgery. And Dr. Jim Andrews gave Breeze the seal of approval to everyone in the league and said, you know, he'll rehab, he'll be fine. But, you know, there are certain teams that didn't want to take that risk. Now, the question for Alabama fans to ponder is this. If Nick Saban had gotten Drew Brees as his quarterback, would he even be the head coach at Alabama right now?
Yeah, the butterfly effect. Mm-hmm. So many things have to happen. And you're right. I thought about that last night when I was watching the game. If Drew Brees goes to the Dolphins, Saban ends up staying at the Dolphins longer. And who knows what happens to Drew Brees, because for so many years until this year, we're starting to see some life. But Cleveland, for example, they've been a black hole. No matter what type of player you were, you went there and got lost. And the Dolphins weren't exactly great. I think they went 7-9. So, yeah, a lot of things to wonder what if in that situation. As for the game last night, the Saints were only a 6-point favorite. So Vegas thought Washington was going to keep it close. Washington's a capable team. But the Saints in prime time, they're not normally great covering on Monday nights. They covered last night. But in primetime in New Orleans, especially an event like that, they're very solid. I believe it was the night when they returned after Katrina, and correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but they played the Falcons, and they just lit up that place. And it's a very electric place. And so at primetime in New Orleans, a tough road trip for the Redskins.
Yeah, Gleason started that game you're referring to. Was a Monday night game. The first game back in New Orleans after Katrina, Gleason blocks the first punt of the Falcons. They score a touchdown off the block punt, and the beatdown was on. Next up for Breeze and the Saints, they take a road trip to Baltimore after having a bye this week. Washington, they're going to host the Panthers, as we mentioned earlier in the show. Also, we talked about the Eagles and the Giants in different segments, and they will kick off week 6. Thursday night. We'll break that game down on Thursday morning. Mike, both teams really need a win to right the ship.
They do, and that's going to be a typical NFC East battle. Look at, we talked about it, the Eagles. They're defending Super Bowl champions. They might not even make the playoffs unless I think they're one of the top teams in the NFC, but it doesn't matter. This is not college football. It's not subjective. There's no polls. You got to go out and get a record that's worthy of playoff contention. And the Giants, I think they're out of playoff contention, but we've seen them in the past be out of playoff contention and beat the Eagles. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, the Giants, they've got more trouble than worried about getting the playoffs right now. They've got a situation in their locker room. They need to get under control. If Monday Night Football wasn't enough for you and you got to have a little bit more tonight, Mike, we've even got a college game tonight. My old coaching comrade out at Eastern New Mexico University, Blake Anderson, now head coach of the Arkansas State Red Wolves. They used to be the Indians a long time ago, but now they're the Red Wolves. They host Appalachian State in a Sun Belt contest.
Yeah, it's on national TV. Kicks off at 8 Eastern. App State, remember, this is the team that went up to Penn State, was leading them with about a minute to go, lost in overtime to Penn State. That's their only loss. Their other games, they have trounced teams. Remember last year in the bowl game, I think they beat Toledo 34-35-0. This App State team can play. They're on the road at Arkansas State. I knew they would be favored, but, Coach, they're favored by around 10 points. The only That's a big number, so it kind of leans me to believe that Appalachian State is that much better, but I still have a tough time laying that number. But a game definitely worth watching here, two of the top teams in the Sun Belt.
Know that you're probably up to date on this. We've got a hurricane that's coming up through the Gulf again. It's going to land. They're projecting it to land somewhere around the Panama City area. And then come on up in through Georgia, where we are here, right south of Atlanta, and into the Carolinas. Do you think that this is going to affect any of the college football games this weekend?
What teams? South Carolina, North Carolina, Clemson. I believe South Carolina is at home against A&M. That could is that correct?
Yes.
Yep, that game could be affected. A couple of games. Yeah, it's – we may be looking at some more cancellations. because especially if they're non-conference, they'll just get canceled. Mm-hmm. The conference games, they're going to have to make them up somehow.
Yeah, that's going to be tough, let's just say that if your teams are not in the conference championship game, you know, technically you could play that week. But however, you know, weather cancellations, they're becoming all too frequent in the last several years. I hardly ever remember having cancellations coming up as a player and then into coaching. But it just seems like the last 5 years or so, there had just been a ton of cancellations that are weather related, and that's kind of strange.
It really is. I remember attending an Alabama-Auburn game about 1983. There was a tornado warning, uh-huh. and it was within a mile or so of Legion Field. And the players didn't leave the field, and the fans didn't leave the field. It's a whole different – they're much more diligent and vigilant now, more responsible, actually. But the Hurricane, you know, of course, Andrew canceled some games for Miami mm-hmm. back in 92. But we've seen a lot of Hurricanes come up into the mainland and cancel games. You're right.
All right, Mike, we'll go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back on GameDaySportsRadio.com with Yogi Roth, talking a little Pac-12 football. But, Mike, as always, thank you for your time, and we will talk to you again on Thursday morning. How about it?
Yep, sounds great. Glad to be here, and we'll talk Thursday.
Mike Bernard, OTM Sports. We'll be right back on GameDaySportsRadio.com.